Linoleum Nights,
a podcast of the evening.
I'm laughing at something that's so stupid, but we're going to talk about it on LKTV. So sorry to.
We'll get into that later. Welcome to Linoleum Nights.
Explain Linoleum Nights to people.
So Linoleum Nights, when we started having additional content on our Patreon at patreon.com/linoleumknife, and yes, if you're not a current subscriber, we've been giving you free samples all week of shows like LKTV and Linoleum Knife and Fork, and Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Right.
One of our listeners said that they wanted a show that was maybe, you know, for the higher access members, where, you know, we let our hair down a little, where we would, you know, use the language that we don't use on other shows, the LKTV with Guy Branum notwithstanding, you know, and we talk about more sensitive subjects, you know, politics or, you know, sexuality, religion, whatever, what have you.
Sensitive? Is that what you just said?
Did I say sensitive?
Sensitive.
Sure, why not? Anyway,
and
originally we were going to think, okay, so we would call it Linoleum Knife After Dark.
Yeah.
And then, as he so often does, friend and neighbor Gary Cotty,
yep,
came through in the clutch with Linoleum Nights.
Right.
So, yeah, so this is the show where if you are one of the higher level Patreon members, you get to watch us record this show.
That is such a treat.
On Facebook Live.
Because
it's the only show we do that way.
In spite of the name, we record it on Sunday mornings.
First thing in the morning.
At like 9 or 10 a.m.
Yeah.
So
nights
if
is
you're
a
awake
state
at
of
that
mind,
time,
you know,
and you want to watch us often in our pajamas and bedhead do a live video podcast, that this is, you have found your place.
Yes. So this episode, we're keeping it clean. We're putting it out on the regular feed. It's the last of our holiday free samples.
Yeah, normally Linoleum Nights is also where we do a lot of cussing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cussing because we are big time cussers.
It's true.
When it's not Linoleum Knife.
LKTV,
Linoleum Knife and Fork. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Right.
We keep the podcasts clean. Honestly, just kind of as a challenge to ourselves.
Yes.
Like, can we do it?
Yes.
And we have learned over the years, we're very good at not saying
the bad swears.
Yeah.
And subsequently, we've become a podcast that people listen to in their cars with their children.
Yeah.
It all paid
off
in the end.
I mean, I want to take a poll of all the people who do listen to the show in their cars with mm-hmm. their kids or at home with their kids who don't care. Like, who think, you know what? I say those things in front of my kids all the time.
Well, it's too
late.
My
children
now
also use profanity. Like, I need to know who's out there doing that.
We have crossed the Rubicon, Dave White. It's too late to go back.
No. I don't want to go back. I just want to know.
Sure.
Like,
just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we do on a regular basis on Linoleum Nights is the Ask Us Anything episode.
Yeah, every month we do one Ask Us Anything episode, and people write in and they ask us things and we answer it unless we don't like the question.
Yes.
But I don't think we've ever encountered a question that we found objectionable.
I think there might have been some that we just sort of like tossed on the way to. Yeah, it's ask
not
us anything.
To my
it's
memory.
Not that we're going to answer anything.
Right.
You can ask all the live long day.
Right. And maybe we'll tell you the answer.
Yes. So we asked all of our Patreon members, even ones who don't normally get Linoleum Nights, to send questions our way, and today we will answer
them. And everybody gets to hear the answers.
Yes.
Well, look who's here. Question number one.
Mm-hmm.
Rye.
Oh, well, hi, Rye.
Rye has directed me in a variety of film-related videos that I don't think ever saw the light of day.
Mm, yes, that's true.
And it was like the second go-around after the first try. Like, Rye may have even been the director on the first go-around, but maybe we weren't. I didn't quite know him yet at that time. Anyway, the first time, movies.com, the site that must never be named, put me on camera, Lou was my editor.
Lou Harris.
Lou, back in the day, Lou was mm-hmm. my editor. And his big idea was, let's get him on video. I've told this story so many times, but it bears repeating because it's my favorite story of Los Angeles rejection. Disney owned Movies.com at the time, and they put me on camera on these test videos. And the notes that came back, I cherish these. The first one said, scary face. The second one said, reads thuggish. Instead of keeping that information from me, Lou was like, get a load of this. And,
well, just think of it this way. Everybody that you ever see on television or hosting things on a regular basis on the internet never got that note.
They sure did not, because that's what passed them through to the next round.
Exactly.
they weed out.
They jumped that hurdle.
They weed out potato-shaped people with very scarred faces and apparently a less than a cuddly presentation.
Fools, all of them.
I think I'm a very cuddly presentation. I don't know what they're talking about.
And you're certainly not thuggish, because that would require public confrontation.
Right. I don't want to be. Listen, I don't want to be accused of taking part in a rumble. So Rye comes along the second time that they think they're going to do this again, and they did it again, and I don't think those aired anywhere either. Nope. But let me tell you something. They paid me so well.
Nice.
Like, they were like, we're going to pay you X amount of money to do these videos. And I was like, sign me up for more video. Have you checked the notes from the first time? No? That's okay. Where's my check?
Rye got me a very sweet one-day gig that was, I don't even know why, but I was interviewing Enrique Iglesias on behalf of Target. No idea, but it was a lot of fun.
In English or Spanish?
In Spanish.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Rye has a question for us.
Okay. What does Rye wish to
know? Now that we've told everybody all about Rye.
Yes.
What is your greatest disagreement regarding a critique of the arts? We have so many of them.
Yeah.
And they're all pretty great.
I mean, like, I'd say on this show, might still be American Ultra, I think. That's the one I always think about.
I'm not dying on that hill.
Okay.
I just like that movie.
You know, obviously, like, intrinsically woven into our lives is your love of Sonic Youth, whom I cannot stand.
Sonic Youth being sort of a stand-in for all noise-based music, which is a part of my life, not all of my life.
No, you have a very balanced diet.
I'm blanking now on who recently asked me why I don't like hip-hop, and I was like, wait a second, no, I grew up with hip-hop. Of course I like hip-hop. Maybe I don't talk about it enough here.
Perhaps.
I was like, I don't know. Anyway, I mean, like, there's stuff that we disagree on a basic level, like, do you want to hear this band? No, I do not. Says Alonzo Duralde. Do you want to go to this art gallery to see this artist? No, I do not, says Alonzo Duralde. What is it that you are down for that I'm not?
Board games.
I'll play them. I'll play. That's not the arts, though. That's just
recreation. Yeah. I don't know. You are.
Maybe if you didn't like stomp me into dust every time we play a board game. And it doesn't even matter what the board game is. Monopoly, Candyland. It doesn't matter. You are out for blood every time, and you get it.
You're more game for things than I am in terms of the arts. Right. I'd say maybe like I'm more because of years of having to program Outfest,
yeah,
and having to like be maybe generous to queer films that are well intended or have ambition or get some things right and yeah. are good enough to be included in a lineup where you are trying to like cover a lot of bases or whatever.
Right.
I give a lot more slack to like queer cinema that is, you know, maybe not quite hitting on all cylinders.
I am not a film festival programmer at a queer film festival, and therefore I don't have time for a lot of nonsense.
Yeah.
And there are some very, very, very extremely bad queer films out there that the folks who made them should have known better or didn't something else.
I mean, obviously...
Not going to name names right here and now.
You despise Hallmark Christmas movies, but...
I do, because they are not good
on any level. I don't defend those as art.
Right. What director... What filmmakers do we constantly disagree on?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't necessarily share your enthusiasm for people like Hosea Sien or whatever.
Alonso is wrong about Beautrevail.
Oh, yeah, right.
Alonso is wrong about Gummo. Mm-hmm. Alonso is wrong about... What else are you wrong about?
You're wrong about...
Can't think of it, can
you?
No. Because I'm always right.
I know the movie. There was a movie. It was. I remember it stood out to me because it was one of the rare times that I liked something and you didn't.
Hmm.
Carnage.
Carnage.
The film version of God of Carnage with Jodie Foster and Christoph Waltz.
No, I hate that movie.
Yeah.
Jennifer asks, how do you divide housework? Would you like to take this one or should I?
Well, I would say the quick answer is Dave does most of it. Just because I tend to have more deadlines and more podcasty things to deal with than he does. But like I pretty much on the regular, like my jobs are always take down the trash, do the laundry.
A home is a machine. And the machine must continue to function.
Yes.
And I have fewer public-facing responsibilities than you do.
Yes.
Like, you're certainly on more podcasts than I am, and you are on camera doing these things. You're the one, come December, that publicists start calling up and saying, hey, would you like to come do a Q&A with Udo Kier? You know, or like you did one with... the folks who made No Ordinary Man.
Yeah.
You did one with Almodovar for mm-hmm. Parallel Mothers. So, yeah. Like, they call you. They don't call me.
Yeah.
And...
Because they heard you read Thuggish.
Well, you know, you better watch out. there will be fisticuffs.
You're going to jump that direction.
It's going to be a scrap. So the so you have more public facing commitments than I do, consequently more deadlines. You are the editor of film reviews for The Wrap, and I am just one of your writers. So you've got daily stuff that you have to like deal with, and I have these shows that we do and my own writing commitments for, you know, other, you know, employers.
And, you know,
but
you're also the person doing most of the facing of the Patreon clients and their needs.
Yes. But here's the thing. I think no matter who you are as a couple, if you are in a couple, somebody's good at something and somebody is less good at something. Right?
True.
So I cook. I love to cook. I love to bake. I love to... In the moments in the world when friends can come over to our home and there's not a global pandemic, I'm the one that likes to be like, hey, let's have folks come over for dinner. I like to feed my friends.
Yes.
So not only do I like to do that, I'm okay at it. And you are okay at a handful of things. Like, for example, you're going to make me some meatloaf today.
It's true.
It's I'm stoked for this. Alonzo Duralde makes a very good old-fashioned suburban mom meatloaf.
I do.
And I'm thrilled every time it hits the table. You don't see the dirt.
Yes, true.
You don't. You just don't see it. For the first 3 years of living with you, I thought you were pranking me. I would go in and clean the kitchen, and then you would come in immediately behind me. And I mean, after I had thoroughly cleaned stuff, picked up things off counters, wiped everything down, did all the dishes, put everything away, mopped the floor, wiped down the fridge, cleaned the stove,
scoured the sink.
Name it. Yeah, I did it. And then you would walk into the kitchen and make toast. And leave toast crumbs all over the counter. And I remember once looking at you going, are you serious? And you said, what? And I said, do not say what to me. I will choke the life out of you. This was when we still lived in Dallas. We had not even yet moved here.
No.
And I said, you're doing this to make me angry. You're doing this just to hurt me. You're doing this to make me lose my mind. And you said, do what? And it was in that moment that I was like, he has no idea that his action made a mess. And it would just sit there for days. And there were times when I just let it sit there, thinking, oh, he's going to notice that he did this thing, and he's going to clean up after himself. You didn't even notice that it had happened. I realized after a few years that you just don't see the dirt. I see the dirt.
Let me put it this way. I don't see dirt the way that you do. At some point, things reach a point where even I'm like...
Well, yeah, when it becomes revolting.
And this is caked in dust, I see.
Right. Yeah, well, that's...
But you get there way before I do.
I get there on the day that it happens.
Yes.
Yes. And so some people are just good at that sort of thing. I'm good at cleaning and organizing. I would sooner have someone come in and do it for us, but that's not happening.
Yeah.
So not just because of the global pandemic, but because I can't imagine being like the money level of that. That doesn't make sense to me in my head.
Yeah.
At all. So we divide it like this. Alonzo washes dishes because you alone adhere to Cheryl Mendelson's preferred version of washing dishes. The author of Home Comforts.
Yes.
Okay. You take down the trash and you do the laundry. And I scrub the stove and, you know, clean things that you don't even notice are in need.
Yeah.
It works out very well.
Yeah. Those are the broad strokes of it.
Douglas asks, Alonzo, are you still involved in any aspect of Outfest?
Not really. I was set to be a programmer in 2020.
That's right.
And then 2020 became 2020. So that ended. And then in 2021, I just had other stuff going on, and I just didn't have it in my schedule anymore. So right. I have probably ended like my official participation. Like I did wind up being on one of their juries last year. I think it was on like International Shorts or something. So, I mean, I love them and I think they do great work, and I will be at their disposal if they have like things they need from me. But as far as like being on staff, that's probably not happening anymore.
Right. Kathy says, how do you both deal with LA traffic? and specifically other drivers. I had to get on the 405 when I moved across country earlier this year, and I would describe it as a near-death experience. Is there some kind of secret? Well, Kathy, there are so many secrets.
Yes.
I will tell them to you right now. Number one, don't drive. Number two, when you must drive, pick your time.
Yes.
Depending on where you gotta go. Now, some of our best friends live in Long Beach. That is a solid 40-minute drive with no traffic.
Yeah.
It can be as long as 2 hours with traffic. And so you gotta know when to go. Weekend mornings are great. Would you like to go down to Long Beach to have breakfast at a fun restaurant with your friends? Go on a weekend morning. You won't have any problem getting there. Do you need to get to the west side of Los Angeles? Well, you can do that late afternoon and early evening and have a nice clear shot. Do you need to get to the east side of Los Angeles? Never do that because you will always be stuck in traffic.
Well, I think the other secret is, and I still appreciate this about Los Angeles, having lived in Dallas for the 90s, you don't have to get on the freeway here. It'll take you longer, but you can always take surface streets, even to the airports.
Yeah.
You know, and like there are so many places where I've lived where you have to get on the freeway. There's just no way around it.
Yep.
And here
you don't have to do that.
You can get on you can get on Beverly Glen. You can get on, you know, like Santa Monica Boulevard. Like there's a lot of these thoroughfares that go for very long distances and will take you to the places you need to go without you having to get on the 10 or the 405 or whatever.
So traffic is all about timing, depending on where you're going. And if you're lucky and you work at home and you can fix your own schedule and you don't have to commute,
right?
Then that just becomes like a skill set that you develop. As for other drivers, we have no fewer and no more obnoxious, terrible drivers than any other large or medium-sized city.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
But what we do have, and I don't know what other places are like, but what I have noticed in the past few years is that we have an increasingly volatile situation with other drivers. And I no longer, although back in the day when I was young and, you know,
reckless,
scrappy and reckless,
thuggish even,
you know, I would absolutely yell out my window, you know, F you or give them the finger or
honk.
I don't do
any of those things
anymore because I've been in enough situations where people responded in a way that seemed as though they were about to get violent with me.
We've been chased before.
So that'll learn you right there. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Any horrible behavior that I experience on the part of other people out in the world in cars, I take a breath and I say to myself,
Demolition Derby.
That is not what I say to myself. I say to myself, it's an obstacle course.
Obstacle course. Sorry. I get those confused.
It's an obstacle course. And your job is to navigate the obstacles calmly while you breathe.
Yes.
Because there are 30 million people who live in Southern California. How many of them are you going to fix? Zero numbers of those people. No one. You will never fix them. You will never make them behave. You will never make them better drivers. You will never make them considerate. You will never make them not want to shoot you if they have a gun. And they might have a gun. So
let it go.
Let it go. And that's what I do now. I do nothing.
But yeah, you're right. It is about sort of learning the strategies. For example, like if I have a screening that is what I consider the West Side, people think we live on the West Side, depending on where you are. Sure, fine. I guess we do. But like if I have a screening that's near, you know, Santa Monica and the 405, and it's going to be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I know that after that screening, I should just go get dinner somewhere.
On that, in that part of town.
Hang out in that part of town for an hour or two until it becomes feasible to drive back home.
That's correct.
And have traffic move.
Yeah. Correct. Robert Kirby.
Robert Kirby?
The greatest cartoonist, Robert Kirby.
Y'all, his Patreon, he's been posting pages for his upcoming opus, Marry Me a Little, which is just so great. And you should pick it up when it gets published.
He asks, what was the last movie that incited a really big disagreement between you two?
Boy, everybody wants us to fight.
One that has never been resolved satisfactorily. I mean, I know the answer to this.
Tony Erdman?
No, after Tony Erdman.
Oh.
Tony Erdman was one of them.
Yes.
Alonzo is wrong about Tony Erdman.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He thinks it's bad, and I think it's really, really great. But the last time that we super disagreed on a film was when I took you, after all these years, to see Claire Denis' Beau Travail on a big screen at the Arrow, and you...
still didn't like it. I had already not liked it before then.
You still didn't like it, and you kept on not liking it. And on top of that, we also took our friend Chris.
Yes, an aesthete whose taste you actually respect.
Who said to me when we left the theater, okay, between that and the donkey movie, I'm not listening to you ever again.
I liked the donkey movie.
You liked the donkey movie? Well, listen, we couldn't be in a marriage together if you didn't like the donkey movie.
Dave's referring to Robert Bresson's Au Hasard Balthazar.
My all-time favorite film. All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Beau Travail to me is just weak tea Derek Jarman's Sebastian.
Go to your room.
No, I will not.
Widely regarded as Claire Denis' masterpiece.
Not that wide.
Beau Travail is an incredible film that you should see as soon as you possibly can.
I have enjoyed other Claire Denis films, just not that one.
We will never...
see eye to eye on this.
Reach an agreement on this film.
Because I went and saw it on the big screen in a new 4K restoration, blah, 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 and everything. Still, left me cold.
Andrew, who is from Australia.
Yes.
And that information informs this question.
Oh, okay.
Now that you have accepted Marmite into your life... have you tried Promite or Vegemite properly? Okay, I have never heard of Promite.
Yeah, this is new to me.
I have tried Vegemite, and I can't remember now how we wound up with a jar of it. Somebody sent it to us? Maybe it was you,
Andrew.
I didn't taste much difference between Marmite and Vegemite. Vegemite seems a little more... Is the word harsh? Perhaps saltier? I'm not quite sure.
The wiki page says that the Promite is similar to Vegemite and Marmite.
But if I have a, if I was going to pick one between Marmite and Vegemite, it would be Marmite. If you don't know what Marmite is, because you haven't listened to Linoleum, Knife, and Fork, where I bring it up from time to time.
All three of these are...
Marmite and Vegemite are yeast extract spreads. They are brown, and they are gloopy looking, and they are very thick, and you put a thin layer on buttered toast, and then you are happy...
They're very, I mean, is it fair to say that they fall into the umami spectrum?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It's not a flavor that, it's very divisive.
Yeah, very, yes.
It can be a tough taste the first time you have it. The story I told on Linoleum, Knife, and Fork, I was pranked by a bunch of rotten, terrible, hideous British friends the first time I tried it in 1989, And they intentionally told me to put a lot of it on my toast. Yeah. Like, spread it on thick. That's how we do it. And I was like, okay. And I took a big bite and I nearly passed out. And then they found this very amusing.
Who ate the big spoonful of it on camera? Was it like James McAvoy or something?
It was either James McAvoy or Emily Blunt, because they were talking about it in a junket situation. Oh. And she was talking about how she ate it every day when she was a kid. She'd had it for breakfast and then an after-school snack. And she was trying to teach her little American children to love it too. And I don't know if she said she was being successful or not. But then he took a spoonful and just like shoved it in his mouth. And I was like, that's right.
Hardcore.
That's right, Nardia. Get it. I will never put a giant spoonful of it into my mouth because it might kill me.
Yeah.
But a nice little thin layer on toast is just, it's a dream. And we live in an international city where you can just buy it at the supermarket.
And maybe we'll pick up a jar of Promite and see what the deal
is. If I ever come across a jar of Promite and someone can explain to me why I might like it better than Marmite, I will try that.
According to Mars Customer Care, in 2013, we removed vitamins thiamine B1, riboflavin B2, and niacin B3, as well as two flavor enhancers, and found this to benefit some consumers sensitive to those vitamins without impacting taste or texture.
Sensitive to vitamins.
I mean, there's still some of those vitamins in there anyway, naturally, but yeah, it's slightly different, apparently. It's been around since the 50s.
Andrew continues, if I can make a suggestion, Vegemite and strawberry jam is really very good. Same application method as Marmite and peanut butter, which we discussed on the last Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a toasted Nutella sandwich is divine.
Well,
everybody doesn't like something.
Nobody doesn't like a toasted Nutella sandwich.
Nobody doesn't like Nutella, exactly.
Unless you have a hazelnut allergy, I suppose.
Have a wonderful Christmas. It's going to be a toasty 42 degrees Celsius here.
Woo.
That's 108 Fahrenheit.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Stay cool, sir.
That's insane. Oh, shoot. You know what I just did?
What have you done?
Pause the recording.
Do you have it together now?
I do. I hit the wrong button on my laptop, and I...
Oh, no.
I had to go back and... I clicked the wrong thing, and then I had to go back and find the question.
Okay.
All right. Michael.
Yes.
Says, if you knew that you could stop COVID, but that it would involve you getting gravely ill.
Oh my God.
Would you do it? Well, okay.
How gravely ill are we talking?
Like,
for me to be the sacrificial lamb of humanity.
Yeah, like, gravely ill suggests the grave, Michael.
There's more of gravy to you than the grave.
I would like to not be so near to the grave.
Mm.
What if, now hear me out, what if we had some terrible right-wing person become gravely ill?
Too easy. This is a. This
and
is
then
a,
they actually went into the grave.
This is a would you rather kind of thing. I mean, here's the thing. If I become gravely ill and COVID is gone, but then what happens when, like, COVID-24 pops up?
Right.
And we go through this same, you know, ridiculous
waltz
all over.
I'm going to assume that he's
again.
Mentioning, he's thinking about all past, present, and future COVIDs.
Mm.
All the SARSs. Isn't that what the super vaccine is supposed to be handling?
So the SARSs?
When they can get it together and they're, like, they're very kind of slowly working on it. That's what I hear. It's what I've been reading.
I don't know.
Super vaccine.
I mean...
Let's let you, Alonzo, let's let Alonzo get gravely ill.
Okay,
fine. I will be your tending nurse.
Okay.
You'll recover. You will thrive. There will be no after effects, no long-term repercussions.
And while I'm recovering, there will be a variety of puddings.
Yeah.
And mooses and flans. Do I get a parade afterwards for getting ill on behalf of the world?
You get a hero parade.
Okay.
Yeah. So are you going to do it?
Sure. All why right, not? Great. What kind of what? How awful would I be to say no to that?
I don't want to do it.
Well, you know, nobody wants to do it, but, you know.
Jack. Jack has a whole list.
Okay. You want to pick the best one? Or
no, I'm going to read them all.
Do a lightning round.
Yeah, we're going to, yeah.
Okay.
You can only pick one.
I hate these.
Is The Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie or a Halloween movie?
Yes.
Would you like to weigh in? I have an answer.
I'll say this. It is, perhaps, maybe arguably the only Burr Months movie.
Explain.
The final third of the year has been come to be known, certainly among like people who are Christmas podcasters and bloggers, as the Burr months: September, October, November, December. It's like summer is over, we're heading into fall, we're heading into the Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas season, aka not Christmas one, not Christmas two, and Christmas. And so it's a movie that covers the whole waterfront of that season. What's your answer?
It's a Christmas movie.
Okay.
Here's why. The film begins with the entire...
with the completion of Halloween?
With the entire population of Halloween Town singing the song. This is Halloween, Halloween, you know. Yes. Okay, so... and they are executing Halloween, no pun intended.
Right.
They are... they're wrapping it up. They've created a successful Halloween and explained to you, the audience, how great they are at making Halloween happen.
Yes.
And how delighted they are to deliver it to the world cheerfully and with terror. But then, within the first 15 minutes of the film, Jack discovers Christmas and sings the, "What's this?" song.
Yes.
He's confused by it. Then the entire rest of the film is everybody getting on board to make Christmas happen.
Halloween Town style.
Halloween style. So right. It is a film about the gleeful, naive approach of a first Christmas from people who have no business.
Who only understand the rough outlines.
Yeah. And so, and that is why it is heartwarming and delightful. And it's one of my favorites. Like, I adore this film. Because it's about being dumb and happy at the same time. And there's got to be a world where that is actually, you know, possible.
Well, it would have been more efficient if Jack had put his energy into having a plus delta about Halloween to plan for next year rather than, you know, like jump track and get, you know, waylaid by another topic.
See,
but, you know,
but
he's not really a great manager.
Now that they've done Halloween, now that they've done Christmas in this completely wacky, wrong way, they're going to be real good at it the next year.
At Christmas or at Halloween?
At Christmas. There should be a sequel where they prove themselves to be better at Christmas than Christmas people would be at Halloween.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I could see. Yeah, we'd get to know the residents of Christmas Town, and they decide they're going to get back at them by doing Halloween. Yeah. They make it all too nice and wholesome.
Right. And
cozy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my idea.
Somebody at Disney has pitched that at some point, I'm sure.
Question number two. Do you consider Rent a Christmas movie? I barely consider Rent a movie.
Yeah, exactly. I try not to think about the Rent movie. I mean, look, My fallback answer of this, because I get asked this with some frequency, is X a Christmas movie? I'm like, if you think it is,
knock yourself out.
I'm not going to fight you on it. Yes, technically, this movie does begin at, you know, December 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that would technically make it a Christmas movie. Whether you choose to make it part of your own Christmas canon, whether it's a movie that you associate with Christmas, whether it's a movie that gives you Christmas feels, that is entirely subjective and up to you.
Is Gentlemen Prefer Blondes a Christmas movie? No. Do I watch it every December 26th? Yes. Why? It just makes me feel so great.
Yes.
And the day after Christmas is a day for lying around in your pajamas and eating things.
And watching
Gentlemen, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Are, you know, vintage Shaw Brothers martial arts films Christmas movies? No. But do I want to watch those post-Christmas week as well? That is what I want to do. And we just got that box set.
Yes.
I'm so excited about that. Here's a good one. Is The Sound of Music a Christmas movie? It is not. Why then does it appear on network television every Christmas? ABC shows it every year. This movie is almost 60 years old, and they show it annually.
ABC also shows
prime time.
ABC shows the Ten Commandments every Easter.
Yeah.
And the Ten Commandments is as OT as you can get. It has nothing to do with Easter. It's just become this thing that people tune in for every
right. year. So the answer to this question is do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And think whatever you want to think exactly. about stuff. And just enjoy yourself.
Yeah. It's Christmas.
Next one. Where does the Tom Waits song Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis rank among sad Christmas songs?
I do not know it.
It's a sad Christmas song.
I'm guessing yes.
But I have my personal, let's call it a top 20 sad Christmas song because it's Tom Waits and he's worthy.
Sure.
But my personal ones are like
River.
The ones that everybody knows. Joni Mitchell's River.
Tracy Thorn's Joy has become one for me.
But that's not a sad Christmas
song. It is a sad Christmas.
It's a song that acknowledges sadness, but is in fact a song about joy.
It is, yeah. But it makes me cry.
Well, so. It makes you cry because it's delivered the way that Tracy Thorn delivers everything, which is in a
poignant,
melancholy tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sufjan Stevens's Sister Winter, which is about being depressed at Christmas.
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is a sad Christmas song. LCD Sound System's Christmas Will Break Your Heart is a sad Christmas song. I like those quite a bit.
Fairy Tale of New York, yay or nay?
Sad,
I mean.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about people who, they love each other, but they're destroying each other.
Yes.
And they've both hit bottom.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like they might get back up this time. You know, they love each other. And I've heard people talk about it as being a romantic song. And on one level, it is a very romantic song because it's about the destruction of romance and how heartbreaking that is. Mm. But it's also about the destruction of lives.
Won't see another one.
It is sad. Yeah, won't see another one. I'm like, yeah! Sad.
Yes.
Okay, there's one more from Chris. But boy, it sure has given me some deja vu in my head, and I'm thinking that we may have answered this one already at the last Ask Us Anything episode, but you say we didn't.
It's not ringing a bell to me.
He sent this at the end of November, and it says, do you have a set order or timing for setting up your Christmas decorations and decorating your tree? Now, he's referring to our Instagram alt account, where we pose for thirst traps next to a Christmas tree.
We do not.
No, the Instagram account is called DXAX Tree. It's all the Christmas tree decorations and ornaments and house decorations and things. It was created because I have some friends who hate Christmas and who would say things to me like, I'm muting you until January. So I thought, what if I did an alternative account that was just Christmas stuff every single day from like late October till mid January? So that's what we did. We created that DXAX tree. I swear I answered this question. What is the order for putting things up? We put up so I'm just going to address it quickly. The aluminum trees go up first, the yes. day after Thanksgiving, then the big tree that, is live that shows up. And then that happens like first week of December.
Unless we have a weird unless delivery we have thing a like weird this
delivery,
year.
Yeah, which happened this year. And it showed up the day before Thanksgiving. But what I'd like to talk about, I know I answered this.
Okay, sorry.
So hang on.
I never remember things.
But I'm going to talk about how we dismantle.
Ah, there we go.
Because that is...
How do we disassemble?
...equally a thing. And a lot of people find it depressing to take down the Christmas decorations and to put it all back. I do not. It takes me some time to do it because this is absolutely in an order. Alonso Duralde demands that the trees and their decorations remain going until January 6th, which is Epiphany. I find this to be a hilarious date that you would choose because you would no longer call yourself a Catholic.
True.
You are an atheist.
True.
And the Christmas atheist still goes by the Catholic calendar that he grew up with, and he wants the trees left up until January 6th. I don't have a problem with this. I just think it's funny.
Well, look, that we're celebrating the Christmas season at all is perhaps contradictory for an atheist, so I'm just taking it all the way.
Of course. After New Year, after January 1st, I begin taking down all of the non-tree decorations. That is how I start the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. So things that are on shelves, you know, all this cheap-ass garland that we have, you know, thrown all around the apartment, you know, shelves full of vintage, girly brand Christmas candles and wind-up Santa Clauses and weird stuff that we've accumulated over the years, that all starts going back into the bins after January 1st. Hmm. January 7th is when all the decorations on the trees come down. And the first thing to go down is the big live tree because it is the most brittle, crispy and fire hazardish by that point. And because the last thing to go on the tree is tinsel, the tinsel is what comes off the tree first. I do not F around with this. We have on this year for the very first time, we have two full packages of vintage pink yes. tinsel on our tree. That is a very rare find, and we were so excited about it that it went up, but it went up strand by strand, and it's going to come off strand by strand.
Yeah, we're recycling that stuff.
So we can use it again, because once you throw out something like that, you'll be hunting for it again if you want it. So that's going to come down, and then the ornaments are going to come off, and then strand by strand, the lights come off, the star comes off. West Hollywood rules are that you have to now saw your tree in half and do not leave it on the sidewalk anymore. They want you to put it into the dumpster.
Oh, really?
Yep. So that's what we've been doing for the past couple years. And we have a little handsaw. We have one closet in the apartment that is entirely devoted to these bins and bins and bins of Christmas decorations.
Yes.
And they are labeled on the outside with exactly what is in each bin, so they're easier to locate come next year.
It's not a haphazard thing at all. A lot of these ornaments, when they come off the tree, they have to be wrapped in tissue paper or
put in their own separate boxes because they're ancient or very fragile.
Or both.
Or both. So yeah, it is a process, and I document all of it on DXAXtree.
Yes.
I find organizing and storing things to be very satisfying. So I am not at all bummed out by the process. It's like when the leaves fall off trees in the fall. Are you sad that those leaves died? No, it's beautiful. Organization is beautiful. Just ask Cheryl Mendelson, author of Home Comforts, which is the Bible in this home.
For you, anyway. I get sad at the end of Christmas every year just because I do.
Get over it.
I carry on think anyway.
How about you instead think about making a meatloaf for me? There is no meatloaf without me.
Oh, really? Really, Dave White?
Well, think about all the ways that you could be making me happy in January, and that will take your mind off being sad that Christmas is over.
There's no meatloaf without the guy who has had the recipe for years, who is going to make the meatloaf, who got the butcher box coupon at the Kelly Clarkson show.
That's right.
So if there's a me in this meatloaf, it's me. There is no I in meatloaf, but there's a me.
Right. The me that is me.
I'm very excited. I've not made or had a meatloaf in quite some time.
So. Yeah. So that is the end of our Ask Us Anything episode.
Yes.
And if you would like to have more of these once a month, Linoleum Nights happens every Sunday morning.
Yes.
And it is recorded live, and then an audio version goes up onto Patreon. You can enjoy it either way that you choose.
Yes. And the live video doesn't disappear, so you can go back and watch it.
Yes, it's up on Facebook. And so
if you are one of our upper tier members.
It's what was I gonna say? Oh, but once a month we do the Ask Us Anything episode.
Mm-hmm.
Once a month we do an episode that is devoted to music. And then the other two are entirely free form and sometimes completely chaotic and disorganized.
But always fascinating.
Good. Yes.
Well, there's always a fun group of people in the Facebook chat, like asking us questions during and, you know, like commenting upon things.
Several of whom are uniquely horny for a Sunday morning. And I appreciate that about the folks.
You never know how people's clocks
work. Okay, we're done. Goodbye. All
right. Thank you, 2022, everybody.
2022, here we come.
Here we come. Here we come. So, yeah, if you're one of our Patreon folks, thank you, as always, for being a subscriber. And if you haven't, we hope you've enjoyed this sampler this week. And, you know, maybe at some point in 2022, you'll decide you want to hop on board at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Either way, we wish all of you listening a very happy new year, safe and healthy and prosperous and, you know, chill. It would just be nice to be chill for a second.
Just a second.
Yes.
Just one day out of life.
It would be so nice. Until next time, good night.